This episode of the Off Course Podcast is brought to you by Club Champion, home of some of the world's best fitters, over 50,000 club and shaft combinations, and all the latest technology. Club Champion is the ultimate when it comes to getting fit for golf clubs. With plenty of location options and new stores opening as we speak, you're probably quite close to the most robust fitting you have ever experienced. Visit www.clubchampion.com for more info.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, my friends, to a brand new episode of the original Off Course. I am your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week is a little bit of a THP ghost from the past, but he's back. His name is Ryan Hawk. He used to be the editor on THP, writing all kinds of beautiful things for the homepage. Now back and looking great. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you, Dan?
Just hanging out, doing my thing like any other day last week or a couple weeks ago, and suddenly this familiar face pops up on the forum saying like, hey, my kids are back into it. And dude, I get it. Golf's got you back or what?
Yeah. So I've been playing. I'm not exaggerating here. I think I played 4 rounds in 7 years. Two of which were with my kid. He was still pretty little. One of which was a outing for one of my good friends. And he wasn't a golfer, and I was like, well, I've golfed before, so I'll go. And then the other one, I don't even know if I can recall that one. So yeah, about 4 rounds in that long. And you know, the funny thing was, every time I teed it up, I thought to myself, I wonder what's going to happen. I wonder if like this will be the round that makes me, you know, just feel that passion again, that type of thing. And none of them did. I mean, not even a little bit. I was, I was ready to put the clubs away for another year or two after each one of those rounds.
Wow.
So, my son's he's a baseball player, and that really eats up a lot of our summers. But, you know, he just over the last couple of years, like, continues to encourage me to take him out playing. I mean, and he remembers being 4 or 5 years old and me taking him to the course. Now he's going to be 13 in a couple of weeks. And we just started playing together this year, kind of in our off time from baseball. Baseball season ended, and then I don't know, man. I just felt it. It was one of those things. Like, I think on some level, golf's always been like about this intense desire to conquer something that, you know, I never could conquer. But also about relationships and, being with people. Right. And I do think he had a big part in bringing me back. So I'm glad. It's been fun. I've done a lot of reminiscing over the last month or so. Lots of reminiscing.
Yeah, man. That's awesome. The golf is such an individual identity, but also something that we can all relate so easily to, which is super cool about the whole process. But, you know, you definitely need that itch. And it makes me think a lot about our buddy Taylor, Texas Hacker, as you know him, T. Ryan, on the forum now.
Yeah, T. Ryan, yeah.
He took a couple years off. And just one day he was just back. And I've never felt that deep departure from the game, but I certainly get it where you go out there some days and it just feels like a chore. You know, things are just not working out the way you want them to. And you set a goal and you don't hit it. And it's just like, dude, like, what are we doing here? And then you go home. It's like, I could have been here like on my couch drinking all day. And instead I went and got mad for 5 hours. So is that pretty close to, or is it just for you, like the family time was just, it was too much to depart from the game or what?
You know, it was a big combination of those things. I was, as you know, working, as a staff member at THP, the capacity you are now, I was very busy, you know, doing things for THP. At that time I was writing, you know, multiple articles a week, helping to edit and publish all of your guys' articles. I had so that was 2015. So I would have had a 5-year-old and a 2.5-year-old at the time. And, you know, my wife and I have always been really supportive of each other's hobbies. So it was never really a thing where we were having disagreements about the time amount of time I spent on golf. But nonetheless, you eventually kind of are almost forced to begin to prioritize. And at that time, I get what you're saying. You know, I come home after 5 hours and just feel like that was a waste of time. And I would even take it to a greater extent than that. I felt like I was wasting weeks and months, you know, in this pursuit to not be as bad at golf as I, you know, as I thought I was at the time. And I wasn't, I'd love to be as good as I was then now, you know,
yeah.
But, you know, it's a hard thing to accept. I'm used to being, good at things. Right. And, it's a very difficult thing to accept being, you know, not as good as you want at something.
Well, it's not just that, man. I mean, golf is it. I always look at it like a tightrope walk of, there's not a lot of air you can create. You look down at a small iron and you have to hit this thing like 180 yards. Mm-hmm. And there's really only one small location that you can hit it to, when in reality, opening or closing the face 2 degrees misses that by a good margin. It's, you know, there's a huge component of golf is just like understanding of even the perfect shot isn't exactly going to be the best shot. And that's the crazy reality about all that. That's what's always eaten me. It's like you see these videos of the Open, they go to these majors where they put the course on the edge of destruction, yes, basically, and they drop the ball in the same location, and one time it drops it goes left, and the other time it drops it goes right. It's like, okay, that's pretty much golf, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, in a nutshell, it's funny because I was watching balls roll through the fairway, and I actually thought about you during that.
In the divots, I'm assuming.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's a good point, because when Tiger's first tee shot ended up in the divot there, I did think of you at that moment. But you know, one of the things that's kind of helped me accept that mental side of the game a little more has been helping my son learn to control his emotions around the game. And we have this conversation constantly. I'm like, you know, what do you expect? You know, you just started playing. You have to really alter your expectations, dude. You know, like, you cannot expect that every swing you take is going to be good. And really, you probably can't expect 1 out of 30 to be very good, you know, maybe on the range. But that's helped a lot. And he's just such a positive person. So I guess we played off each other a little bit in that regard, and that's kept it a little bit more even keeled.
Yeah, that's a good call. And I felt that with my dad, you know, decades ago or whatever. And my son Cal is now 6, mm-hmm, and I'm really having to catch the things I'm doing out there. And, you know, you see it around the house too. If you do something, your kid will do it.
Yeah,
pretty much 100% of the time. He will try it out and see if he likes it too.
Yeah. Just wait, Dan.
Yeah.
Yeah. You do though. And it's funny, you obviously, especially when your children are younger, you kind of look at them as a mirror of you, and that changes over time. But you know, as they get older, you notice some of those things that maybe you're not super proud of yourself for, and think, all right, you know, maybe I gotta help him dial that back, or her dial that back, and then apply it to yourself for sure. But you know, I think we're blessed. I don't know, sounds like your dad and you are the same way. Sports have always been kind of the great sports has always been the great bond between dads and their kids, and that's really been so with mine, my son, as well as, you know, with my own dad too. So it's a way that you can, I think, find an excuse to spend a lot of time together. It's nice now. You know, it used to be I always felt guilty about going to play golf. You know, I'm leaving my family, and now I feel like it's kind of a positive thing for our family in a lot of regards, because it's a way that we can spend time together too. So
yeah. Well, that's cool, man. We're certainly glad to have you back as part of the game. And with that comes being part of THP. You've always been, you know, spoken so highly of. I mean, our boy James probably listened to this and just absolutely thrilled right now as we go through it. So I think it'd be really fun today just to talk about the changes between then and now.
Sure.
For you, for the game of golf, for whatever. And I want to start, normally I would start with equipment because that's what everyone loves, but mm-hmm. I'd love to know 7 years out, your mentality for the game, how much different is it then, from then to now?
All right. So at that time, especially in the position that I had, and you have to understand the background of the position that I had, and you know, When I started writing for THP, I won a contest. So I wrote an article and I won a contest. And at that time, I had played for less than a year, maybe a little more than a year. So I was bad. I mean, like legitimately bad, right? And that's the best thing about THP, right? That not only are people like I was at that time able to come, share their thoughts, but like, you know, Josh and Morgan legitimately wanted to hear what I had to say and thought that their readers did, you know? So that's all fine. Right. I accepted that. I mean, everybody accepts, you don't realize how bad you are at that point. But then I started playing with, you know, guys like Josh, people in the industry, professionals, just random forum members. And, you know, it started to kind of kill my ego a little bit, like truthfully. I mean, it was hard for me to like go and not be very good. So my mentality a lot of times was almost trying to prove myself, right? So there's a lot of pressure on me, and it wasn't inflicted by THP. Josh has never cared, or Morgan never cared. But I put a lot of pressure on myself. So there was always just like this massive, you know, kind of thing on my shoulder. And now, you know, playing, I really just feel like I'm playing just for the fun, right? And I have this, you know, kind of desire to be back and be better than ever, but it's a different feeling. It's not, I don't want to be a 6 handicap. I just don't give a shit about that, right? I just want to be able to go and play and have fun for a weekend and come home and not be like, I feel bad about it. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of where I'm at.
So okay.
It's a different feeling.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that because, you know, THP at one point started to introduce what are now effectively called experiences. And mm-hmm. you had your opportunities at a few of the big ones. You were mm-hmm. in the granddaddy, you were in a Morgan Cup or five, you know,
two. Yeah.
But back then, at least for a couple of the Morgan Cups we were in, there were no handicaps. You played mano a mano all the way through. And it was for some really fun and for others a bloodbath. So you know, it's evolved a lot in the understanding of handicaps and how much it benefits, and the honesty there. And I think I kind of wonder, like, would that handicap component have made a difference for you, or the idea of you're playing second best or third best of this group still play a really significant role?
So you're right. I was in two Morgan Cups and there was no handicap involved there. So of course, you know, on a announcement day, or you know, the day that the pairings were announced, you're just sitting there the whole time.
And,
you know, please let it be, you know, please let it be somebody that I can, you know, compete against. And for the most part, actually, you know, that usually went pretty well. The granddaddy. So I was the captain of the first granddaddy in 2013. And that was a handicapped event. So I feel like the handicap's a double-edged sword, right? In a forum, right? Because there's two things that a handicap serves purpose for. It is a barometer of your ability, right? So it's kind of like a bragging right in some respects, but at the same time, it's also a protection, right? It's protecting
you
in an event like that. And I do think, you could probably add 5 or 6 strokes on every handicap, sending people out to California. And it still would be a challenge to beat the people at Callaway. That's a very, very difficult thing. But we didn't know that, Dan, at that time. You know, I was the first one. So I was pretty sure that we were going to go out there and kick some ass. I mean, I had a good team. I had some good players, some really long hitters, great guys. We were really, really tight. And I don't think it would even come close to mattering. It's just so difficult to go out there.
Yeah. I mean, there's a multitude of reasons why it's challenging. Number one, the condition you're in and the different location, different condition, spectacular golf course, new clubs. there's a lot of things that create the potential to be uncomfortable. And then you add on the part where, oh, hey, by the way, the people from this company who know everything about these products, you're about to hit in front of. So good luck keeping your hat on. So of course that begins the conversation of, do you have a traveling handicap, and what exactly does that mean? So
yeah, for sure. You know, I think a lot of times handicap, I mean, you can be as honest as you want, but you can also wish a lot in a handicap too. it's easy to play easy courses. It's easy to play easy sets of tees, all kinds of things like that. And, you know, so at the same time as not wanting to get manhandled in California, you still want to be able to show to yourself, hey, you know, everything that I've been doing, this has made a difference in this, you know, somewhat insignificant number. So I was really disappointed in the way that the Granddaddy turned out. I was really disappointed in how that turned out. And
there are not a small number of people who feel that way from a results perspective when it comes to the Granddaddy.
Well, and so we know that now, right? But at the time we did not know that. And you know, God, I apologize to Josh standing there in Palm Springs. I'm like, I'm sorry. I really felt like we were going to do better than this. But we just didn't know. And now time bears out, right? That it's pretty tough to come in there and beat those guys. But it was an amazing time. An amazing time.
Well, we got a nice team building this year, looking for our second opportunity to beat them. So, you know, that's pretty cool. But the one segue to that is, being that you've had all these experiences, even though they're a number of years out, is there one significant memory or a couple significant memories during your time traveling in and around THP that are worth bringing up?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we could make a
PG-13
series off of that.
Listening, so, yeah.
You know, course experiences, you know, we called them events then. Originally, we called them outings, right? They were a lot different then. Quite a few more people, less organized in the overall scope. And of course, we did a lot of things locally as well, too. I can remember organizing something in Des Moines, Iowa, and, you know, thinking that the motel, I think it was a Motel 8, no, Motel 6, yeah, Super 8, something like that. And Altoona, Iowa would be kind of a prime location. And I mean, all right, yeah, PG-13. So we saw just a really unkept lady leaving, you know, rooms really early in the morning, and everybody's just sort of sitting there and looking at me, wondering why I would have picked that place. But, you know, we had a lot of fun at PGA National 2010 in the fall. We went back 2011. You know, I look back at those times. My wife went with me. Actually, I'm pretty sure that your wife was with you in PGA National as well.
Yeah.
One time when mine was there. So you know what I'm talking about. It's just sort of this chaotic thing. But okay, so I made a bet on the forum with another member that I could eat an entire bottle of Bacos in, I think, a minute, maybe, right?
What's just a Bacos?
A Bacos. So those are bacon bits.
Okay. Right? Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kind of the bacon bits, the really crunchy ones. And I mean, I was convinced I could do it. And of course, we're drinking some beers. So they're taking video. This would have been 2011. So of course, the video is so poor quality. But I lift up the bottle of Bacos. I have a beer in the other hand. They start the timer and I take the first chug. And I don't. Have you ever had these? Have you ever had?
I've had bacon bits, but
yeah. So you wouldn't. You know. It's like eating cat litter. I mean, it's impossible. It immediately absorbs every just little piece of moisture in your mouth, completely gone. You can't swallow them. I mean, it'd be like swallowing sand. I mean, it's just impossible. I immediately just start kind of like gag reflexing. And so then, just try to swallow them whole with big drinks of beer. In the background, my wife is going, "Come on, you can do this," and cursing at me. She really wanted me to win. She really wanted me to pull that off. And then of course I failed. So there's that. I felt like every time I went to an event or an experience, I came home with some sort of new identity for at least the next few months. So there was Bacos or picture I took, that type of thing.
Any on course stuff? I love how all this is off course.
I know. well, yeah. So Josh, me, another member, I can't remember, and then Jason Coons, all had it was a contest between two teams, right? So it was me and Josh and then Jake and his partner had a contest, and then it was just going to be, I think, a best ball, maybe stroke player match play, I don't remember, but end result was the losing team had to give their drivers to the winning team. And so I'm pretty, and I'll tell you, here's the secret to playing. No matter how bad you are, of course, you always talk shit the whole time, right? Like, it doesn't matter. Yeah. And I have no fear. Right. I talked, smack to Harry and Jason Finley before the granddaddy with no shame, knowing that I could never back 99% of it. So whatever. So we've been talking about that for a long time. I get on the tee. I know D-Deck was back there, probably 30, 40 people standing on the first tee box. It's a Squire course, which doesn't even exist at PGA National anymore. And I just hosled a driver directly 40 yards left, right into somebody's window. I didn't break it, but that feeling, it is just an intense feeling of like just nerves and anticipation and,
no one knows what you're talking about at all.
No, not at all. Yeah. So terrible. So
it's brutal. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That on course. I mean, I could tell a million stories. I'm sure.
We'll save them.
I'm sure most
one.
People could relate, though.
We'll get it's you difficult. Back on here as you ponder and obviously create new memories. But I love how much of a heel you've become with these memories. It's like, tell me a great memory. Well, I'll tell you one where it makes me look like a mess.
And that's okay. That's okay. Because it was always fun. And we had Josh and I had matches where we went out and won as well. I had good rounds at events too. But the funniest stories, I think, are always my misfortunes during those times. And that's okay. I don't mind reliving it in that regard. None of it would have been the same if it had gone any other way.
But to your point, I mean, we see all these unbelievable experiences unwrap and showcase these golf courses that are beautiful, and these the special shots of the weekend usually get paraded around a little bit. Mm-hmm. No, at no fault to the person who actually does it, probably mostly right. Everyone else who celebrates it, but the experience itself is the real glue that connects everything together. And, those are the lasting memories, and the part which I think separates THP is, which I just don't think there are that many folks who take themselves that seriously, where you put them in this scenario and they probably act one and the same, as opposed to just being, who hits the ball further,
yeah,
who has a bigger house, that kind of conversation just rarely comes into play, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, throughout all these things that I did, you know, I met so many people, made so many connections, you know, relationships that, you know, even now, 7 years later, I can go back and remember. I mean, I just found a picture the other day and I still remember vividly you in this moment. In Myrtle Beach on like a Saturday night during the Morgan Cup, coming over and us just sitting there with you know, 8 or 9 guys, and just the, you know, the gravity of that situation, and just how great all that was. You know, I can transport right back to that and feel all those things. You know, I can remember standing on the patio at the Hideaway, looking over the mountains there. At the very end of the granddaddy, just, you know, that kind of emotional drain that hits you at that moment. I'm sure you had the same moment too, right? Or, you know, just all the moments with the people and the places. I can't believe how lucky I am sometimes, you know. I'm sure I would assume you feel the same way. Just amazing.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Our feelings were a little bit different at the granddaddy, but it was more like, for that one, I put so much pressure on myself to put together a team that would finally get it done. And to be able to beat Harry and Signals, which was like my tribute to all my former captains. and then the brilliant Choco Taco I ate there after, about a minute after, from one of the comfort stations. And it didn't last more than 10 seconds, but you know, that whole feeling, there's just this unbelievable release of pent up emotion, fear, excitement, frustration. It was just all there, right? And you finally get to take your 10 seconds, and, you know, being a captain, you're so focused on everyone else. And finally it's like, all right, let's just take 5 seconds here to just eat all this up and create a memory. So I feel you, man. That's, but I mean, that's the experience that that should be had. Like, you put everything into it, and I know I'm to a fault with that in a lot of experiences I've been a part of. But you know, that it's cool that hangs with you so hard. And even when you step away from the game and then come back, it's, you know, it's still very much there, and if not, maybe a little bit more rich.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, you know, I'd never want to be a captain of anything again in my life. Right. I don't, you know, though oddly, I leave kind of that world and go immediately to coaching, right? Which is sort of, in a way, sort of the same thing. Maybe a little different, but that pressure that you put on yourself is real, though. It's legitimate, and it's not just the pressure of your own performance, it's the pressure of everybody else's too.
If you do it right, yeah. I'm with you.
And you know, I put a lot of pressure on myself just to make sure that guys had a good time, that they got as much out of it as I knew they could, right? But that was a big deal at the granddaddy for me, and at the Morgan Cup when I captained that team. I wanted those guys to come out of that experience and really feel like, you know, they had just got every little bit out of it, whether it was from an equipment standpoint or, you know, emotionally or whatever, you know, just get it all, that because it's all there for the taking.
Well, we got a segue going down memory lane for a while.
Yes.
But I want to know, because you just mentioned equipment, I'd love to talk a little bit about how things have changed. You know, being in it, you see these incremental changes year over year. Now that I'm thinking about it, I mean, you're talking about a granddaddy where, what was new back then? Like,
extreme? X2 hot.
Okay. Hot. Yeah. So that was the big year for that.
Big birth of Alpha at the time, I think it was. Had like an interchangeable weight on the bottom.
Yeah. The gravity core, or whatever it's called.
And I left in 2015 and so after the granddaddy, that next summer was the Morgan Cup, and that's when the Strixon came out with the Z545s. I'm not sure I can even remember a piece of equipment from 2015 off the top of my head, but yeah, you're right. Incrementally, things, you notice differences in technology, obviously, especially when somebody comes out with something brand new, like when movable weights became a thing. Forward low CG came out and embarrassed me.
SLDR, you know, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then they managed to take that. They took that and made it into a product that could actually function for golfers thereafter, not just for the guys who hit the center of the head. It's like, to me, it's like, oh, I barely remember that time because I've been so focused on each thing as they come.
Yes.
Whereas, you know, you've got this 7-year gap. So when you look at, let's say, Stealth versus SLDR or you know, some of the new crazy products like, Stealth is a great Titleist has had a massive jump in their quality over the last 7 years. And
one thing I noticed is that all the drivers now, if you turn them over, they all look like spaceships, because there's that really big wing coming off the back now. Even if it's maybe understated, it's a really common design feature that I see now. Hollow body irons, you know, one of the last sets of irons that I reviewed would have been hollow body, but at that time, you know, you didn't play hollow bodies and really brag about it so much, you know. Like now, yeah, I was actually watching one of your videos on YouTube earlier about, because I've been reading about the Cobra Forge Tech,
yeah, the new ones, yeah,
and then the Edil SMS, you know, that's very interesting to me that they were able to take a design that really is at the time had a negative kind of connotation to it, or you know, at least kind of a, yeah, I don't want to say negative, but
no, I get it.
That
I
most mean, people would go for, right? And now all of a sudden people are clamoring, right? People are just so interested in irons like that. And I'm dying to get my hands on at least something just to see what the difference is, for sure.
Yeah. For sure. I mean, you see companies who, and this is where I think hollow body has gotten so interesting. Like suddenly just having a full head shape is like critical when you look down on the bag. So one of the ones I'm thinking of, there's a new iron from Titleist, and they actually took the badging and ran it flush with the back of the head. Now, 10 years ago, there'd be a giant cavity there, but there's this understanding that people don't want to see this huge cavity in there, especially when there's that much going on. It's like this perspective that the more solid your club looks, the more solid you're going to hit it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when I very first started playing again, I just happened into a Golf Galaxy and I was looking at a lot of these irons and I'm like, God, there's a lot of muscle backs out there these days. Like, a big muscle back, though, you know, like, it just didn't quite make sense. And the more I read, you know, all those were really just hollow body irons.
Yeah.
I think that's really exciting. I know that, you know, as in the later years while I was reviewing clubs, we really did start to see kind of at that time a real big jump to low spin in irons and higher launch and low spin, you know, obviously in the name of distance in some regard. Well, and probably in all, right? But, you know, so now it seems like that's evolved even farther. Right. And I was always a fan of that type of thing. Right. Cause I've never hit the ball a really long way. So anything that could grab me yards is big. So again, I've been trying to hold off hitting a lot of equipment. I want to kind of get myself, you know, as much rust off as I can before I start getting really deep into it.
Yeah.
Cause I don't want to spend money on things that maybe 3 months from now just aren't really what I'm that interested in, you know.
Well, that's kind of the cool part about hollow body. I mean, we've seen progression over the last couple of years with all these companies refining it. And I mean, even like my current set of irons at the top of the bag are the Mizuno Pro 225s, which are the second run of that, originally the HMBs. And the way they tighten them up to present them in a better light while maintaining the benefits that were there. Like, you can tell these companies are not just getting to the point where they are creating performance, but also getting to the point where they're refining it to a level that players are really going to be excited when they put it in their hands. And I think you might be coming back at the perfect time, because like hollow body is really coming into its own right now.
Yeah, that's super cool. I gotta tell you too, everything I've watched and listened to is from you and James on Adele has just really got me interested too. Just the optimization through weights. I just think that's going to be a really cool thing. I told myself if I could not meet any concrete goals necessarily, but get myself to a certain spot, I was going to drive over to Chicago and maybe club champion it one day or something like that.
Well, I've heard good things about those folks over at Club Champion. So Sis will entertain you a little bit over in that Chicago branch. So that actually brings up a good question is what are your current goals for golf? Like, do you have a set structured logic or are you just going to dive in and see what happens?
Okay. Well, so there's definitely going to be a little bit of a structure to everything, right? So I can't just sit around without wanting to exercise my mind and my body. It's just the way I am. So within a few weeks of being back on the forum, I started talking to Josh and I kind of had an idea brewing through my head because I was looking at the industry now, and probably the biggest technological jump that I see right now is in what's available for game improvement. And I'm not talking about clubs. I'm talking about personal launch monitors, artificial intelligence, just video analysis, all these things that were really out of reach to everyday people, right? Now you can have it right on your phone for, you know, $10 a month, $15 a month. And, you know, obviously there's some more expensive things out there too. So as I was looking at that, I thought, you know, what a compelling thing to look at, or maybe it won't be compelling. I think it's compelling to look at somebody who really hasn't been around the game for a while, and you know, what can I get? How good can I get utilizing all this technology, right? As opposed to kind of the old way of just grinding it out on the range, right? So, and I'm gonna write some articles. I already written one, and you know, we're gonna do some multimedia stuff. We're gonna bring the forum into it really. As much as we can. I'm really into experiencing things with people and celebrating achievements with people. So I want to bring in the forum really deeply as well. With my personal health, one of the things that I learned as I've gotten older is that I need to quit looking at things in terms of just a goal. It doesn't necessarily need to be, I want to weigh 175 pounds, right? Instead, what I started telling myself was, for the next year, I'm going to commit to fitness and see where I end up, right? And so the goal is the commitment. It's not, you know, this is what I'll be. And then, you know, go forward a few months, and getting all those numbers is the easy part, right? The hard part is like actually making long-lasting changes. So what I'm kind of rolling through my head is to incrementally, slowly, and deliberately rebuild my golf swing and see at the end what happens, you know, like where I'm at.
So no specific goals in mind except for personal improvement, especially as it relates to golf over the course of a certain given time frame. And whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, exactly. But really, I think, committing to the process.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that really might committing be, to the process. That might be the most healthy thing I've ever heard as it relates to golf improvement. I mean, I'm over here like, you suck at the driver, Dan. You're never going to get better. You got to do something. We're going to do this by this, by this, by this. I've never looked at it like just, you know, put the time in and hope for the best. It's cool.
And so the driver, for example, and you know, in my mind, I'm in no hurry. My driver game is just, I mean, abysmal, right? And I know that's going to come later. So one time down the road here, and however long it is, I'll look at that and see what little steps I can take to work on that. What I always used to do in the past was I'd become the captain of an event, or I'd be going to an event, or I had like some other like thing in the future. And I'd say, well, I need to be a 12 handicap by
then. Yeah.
And what I found out is that, you know, it just doesn't always work out like that. So you're kind of setting up you're setting yourself up for failure, and the pressure, I think, makes improving harder. I think that makes it harder when you're so worried about the result. And something that is like, golf isn't linear, and improvement isn't linear in something like golf. You're not just always going to get better on a straight line.
Well, this actually brings up a really interesting secondary question to you, being that it's been so many years since you've been around it. There has been a huge jump in the technological aspects of not just accessibility to a launch monitor, which is leaps and bounds, obviously, but there's another component, and that's the individualized stat tracking that comes mm-hmm. into golf. Yes. So I know Gavin over at ShotScope has put up individual numbers for a couple of the participants and their experience mm-hmm. this year. ShotScope offers super easy to use components that go on your golf clubs and stack or track everything effectively for you. And then yes. you get this information later on. Number one, how compelling and interesting is that to you? Because you obviously were excited to read that. And number yeah. two, do you have real interest in incorporating that into your growth process?
Yeah. So, I mean, I love analysis. I love data. I love, getting conclusions from the information, that like what Gavin put on the forum there. I mean, that's just amazing to me. It is unbelievable. That is accessible for anybody out there that wants it. At the same time, right? If I began that today, how relevant is it in my current world? Right? Probably not terribly relevant. I've got some steps that I need to get out of the way first. So my thought on that is the weather clears in the spring. We'll see how the winter has treated me. And then maybe I can look at how I can actually start like lowering the scores as part of this, like I'm not there yet. This is kind of the short way to put it. But if I don't incorporate that into my game, I feel like I'd be foolish. It would be completely foolish, with my personality type, my kind of desire for that type of information, I'd have to bring it in.
Yeah, I love that. So you had to be pretty excited to see that it's come so far where you're not having to manually track everything. It's effectively doing it for you and different things. Now it's in a watch, it's in a off your phone, it's off a device, all those different things like that. That's pretty awesome, right?
It just blows my mind. I'm doing a I'm beta testing now for Alpha Swing. The developer of that app came onto the forum, and even that just is unbelievable to me. Something that can track your swing and so well, and it's not perfect. It's an app on your phone, but what they're able to do in terms of tracking ball flight, estimating carry distance, looking at your body moving, and eventually, I assume, bringing in artificial intelligence to say, hey, we see this is wrong. Here's what you could do to get that right. And I know there are apps out there that are already doing that.
I need like a shock collar. It says, if you go past parallel with a driver, we're going to zap you. Maybe we'll just have someone with a cattle prod behind me as I'm swinging.
So, yeah. And I actually, I have this thing, like it's all backswing related too. And it's all just this monster kind of thing. This monster, ugly, horrible backswing that I'm so ashamed of. And I've actually thought about that. Wouldn't it be nice just to have something just hit you right at the right moment and say, stop, you know, stop.
I mean, is this an invitation? Cause I'm going to do it. I'm coming up.
I'll be your first. I'll test it.
Whack.
You know, anything. But that's what I want to look at. I do want to look at, first of all, are all these different things relevant? Are they really relevant? Is it worth spending money on something like this? Will you actually see some sort of benefit out of it? And how can you utilize things like this to your benefit if it's there for you to take? Because not everybody's technologically inclined, and not everybody wants to spend the time trying to figure out how to do things. So maybe I can guinea pig it a little bit and save people trouble.
Well, I'm pumped you're back. I'm pumped that you've got this much excitement, not just for the game of golf again, but for actually the growth of the game and in your world. And the fact that you're connecting with your family is very, very cool.
Can I tell you the one thing that's like the real driver of it all?
Yeah, please.
I'm pretty sure my son's out driving me right now. There. That's real talk right there. I mean, like, pretty sure.
Not good.
He's hitting his driver really, really well.
And, I mean, it's good if you're.
I can't.
If you're doing some like father-son stuff and you guys are out driving other people as a team, maybe that's okay, like a little shamble action. But
I'm gonna come back and at least hold this off for another 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I love that. Well, Mr. Ryan Hawk, do you have any questions for me today, buddy?
Dan. Oh, geez. You know, kind of a comment, but, you know, I've told you this privately. I think that you're just doing great things at THP. I really do. I love you. I love the podcast. And, you know, 5 years ago, I wouldn't even listen to a podcast. But I really get into podcasts now. And it's exceptional. How has your experience around equipment changed for the better in the last 7 years? I mean, how's your THP staffer kind of experience changed, whether for the better or the worse, I suppose?
Yeah, I think it kind of relates to the rest of my experience with golf. Is I'm not going pro. If anything, I'm like a washed up has been at best in the skilled rate. So no, that's very harsh criticism, but my focus over the last probably 5 years has been on just really truly enjoying the experience. I think that reflects a lot on the time away from my family. When I do take it, I want to make sure I'm utilizing it in a positive way instead of going and getting mad and then coming home and bringing mad home. So I think that actually reflects on THP as well. My goal has been to share and present and have a great time. And that includes the forum. We've gotten I wouldn't say overall casual there, but we've allowed the casual experience to be as good as the golf experience there when you're choosing it where you want to talk and feeling like you can bring your other avenues of life to other THPers as a part of the community. And keeping it thread specific. So you want to go talk about golf, you do that in the golf threads. So, I mean, that for me has been a really wonderful experience, just enjoying the whole community aspect of it all. So,
yeah, you know, I was talking to Josh the other day, and you know, one of the things is that people come to places like THP because they want to be validated, right? They want to share things about their life, and they want other people to see them and say, you know, yeah, that's cool. And you guys, you've done an amazing job in 7 years fostering that. You can tell for sure. When's the St. Louis thing going down?
Oh yeah, the little private trip out to St. Louis.
Well, no, I heard you ask James on the podcast at some
point. Yeah. So I've been bugging our buddy James, who is a staff writer on THP. About hitting up some different cities. This is one thing I've always wanted to do, man. We always talk about golf trips and then needed to be like, let's go to X golf course that everyone wants to play. My thought is like, let's go to some random town that we can actually drive to since flights suck now. and and see what the golf's like there. I think that'd be really interesting. So St. Louis is a really nice middle place, and now in fact you are there, so you know, maybe we'll have to do something like that and share it with the forum. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
I'm itching to go out and do a little traveling for a weekend. It sounds like a good time.
Nice. Well, my friend, thanks again for coming on, buddy. It's a lot of fun. I can't wait to share in this journey with you. I'm going to be rooting pretty hard for you and probably being mean if you don't enjoy the process. So
I appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to it as well, and I'm really looking forward to seeing if we can inspire some things in people in the community as well, help them, because there's a lot of things going on, a lot of people trying to get ready for various experiences, and maybe we can help them along the way.
Well, I look forward to it, and folks out there, if you are playing golf this weekend, have a great time. Make a count. Have fun. And we'll see you next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network. Your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.